The Minnesota Humanities Center, along with the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian and the Indian Affairs Council of Minnesota, has partnered with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, MINSCU, to highlight the history of treaty making in Minnesota with the exhibit, Why Treaties Matter, Self-Government in the Dakota and Ojibwe Nations. Kicking off the start of its two-year tour around the MINSCU system, St. Cloud State University is the first to host the exhibit. Officially opening to the public on August 25th, the exhibit will be on campus through Friday. St. Cloud State University Associate Professor of History, Rob Galler, explains why an exhibit of this type is key to understanding the complex relationship of American Indians in Minnesota.
Why Treaties Matter is here at St. Cloud State. It's been working its way around the state generally, but I think it's a real important opportunity for students and the public to learn about how history for American Indian people in the past affects them in the present. And in particular, treaties of the past impact and empower tribes to act on their own nowadays. And I think the exhibit gives us a good example of the impact of the treaties of the past on today. The exhibit is set up in a good fashion, somewhat circular, in a way that addresses the tribal sovereignty. It begins by placing Minnesota tribes, Dakota and Ojibwe tribes, in the state of Minnesota, gives you a sense geographically of where the 11 tribes are, and then it proceeds historically from a discussion of how tribes interacted with their land, and then how they interacted with the arrival of Europeans and Americans. And then it transitions into, the more difficult topics of tribal land loss, negative interactions, and then increasing tribal losses of land. From there, it then starts to shift into the 20th century, talking about how, despite all that, tribal people have continued on. They've maintained their involvement in the land, and increasingly how their sovereignty and their tribal governments are acting today to help continue their commitment to supporting their land, their people, and their culture. I think there's a range of things that they have in there. Certainly, they start off with both groups and their connection to land and the significance of land, which connects a people and a place ultimately to creation and spirituality. It talks about cooperative relationships initially that took place with European and American people. And I think that's a story that's often not told, which history teaches us that people can interact positively. I think we often jump right to the story of conflicts that take place. I think they could have done a little bit more on the conflict angle in terms of 1862. They certainly talk about the Dakota people rose up, and it's certainly not the majority or a single united action. They could have broken that apart. That wasn't their purpose, but, that might be overly simplified. But I think from there on, we see different tribal members going to Washington, D.C., meeting with members of Congress. The president shows them as national leaders that they are. And of course, tribes are nations. They're sovereign groups that meet they're on the level of the United States as opposed to the states individually. So I think it places them on that level. And then, as I said, they show enough actions and accomplishments and programs today that give us a sense of what people are doing, what's effectively taking place. I think the representations show them reasonably well. It's not a huge exhibit. There's lots more that could be said. Each community has their own distinct people doing different things. You can't talk about religion, environment, and economic development in every one. So it seems like one group gets one story and one group gets the other, but that's fairly natural. I think it's also somewhat a metaphor of what Native tribes are doing in other states as well. But I think it gives a generally positive characterization of the actions, the sophistication, and the thought processes and the goals of the different groups. So I think in that, the 19th century, they're going to see this and hopefully get a new perspective on this topic and maybe help them to think there are a lot of other topics they need to learn more about as well.
Too often, the history of American Indians taught in the school systems today focus primarily on the negative issues facing American Indians.
I think most often, U.S. history textbooks only talk about the decline and loss of tribal people in the late 19th century, but I'd say close to half the exhibit is about the 20th century. It shows Native people going to Washington, D.C., meeting in council, making decisions, using their government to create programs. It talks about economic development, environmental programs, and cultural continuation of peoples. So I think in a way it sort of breaks apart the idea that Native people existed in the past, which is maybe a common sense, and instead shows them as living into the future with some success stories in today's times, which often is left out. And so I think that's a real value of the place. And if you want to think about the way the exhibit is set up, as it starts coming toward the end, it's circling back toward the beginning and showing where Native people had total sovereignty in the early days. We're not quite there yet. You might argue that the exhibit ends on a pretty positive note, and there are certainly lingering problems, but it moves us in that direction, showing Native people acting on their own in tribal governments, in community organizations, and doing things to benefit themselves, which also breaks apart the idea that things are done for Indian people, and instead talks about people doing things for themselves, which I think is a real important message. Not to mention, they're contributing to the state of Minnesota, and I think the distinction is often not made there. It's certainly in Minnesota history curriculum, and people are trying to do it. Preparation for teachers and understanding Native American history and things like that is fairly minimal. There are classes to take, but there's not a whole lot that have to be taken. There's more that could be done to prepare teachers better. And, hopefully some of these things will enhance that. I think sometimes any topic that's being taught has to cover so much, it's hard for it to do justice to any single topic. And I know there are any number of people who are teaching Minnesota history today as teachers who'd say, I'd like to learn more. And I think exhibits like this give them that opportunity to do so. So I'm hopeful that it will be part of that development. The Northern Lights series for Minnesota History, I know, has come out with a new edition. And I think increasingly they're trying to add more toward the curriculum, but it ultimately comes down to preparing teachers to feel comfortable to talk about the different topics. And issues like sovereignty can be challenging. So I think the more exposure they have to particular elements and things they can bring into the class, I think the better.
One of the main topics of the exhibit, aside from treaty making between the state and federal governments with the tribal nations, is the concept of sovereignty.
Sovereignty really shows how Native people act on their own and they control their own destiny. So often in American Indian history, things are done to Native people. This exhibit shows Native people taking action on their own. They're doing things for themselves. What's the benefit for them and their people, which includes reacting and making decisions from their past, and then adapting themselves to the current climate and doing things that move their people forward. So it really breaks apart the idea of Indian people as passive and just hoping something good happens, and instead shows them acting. And, this just gives sort of a layer of that. There's lots more, of course, that they have done. But I think it gives us a good opportunity to see what's happening. Often things that are happening even today that people don't know about. And I think it really highlights that. And maybe that encourages people to look for more things that are happening today.
Why Treaties Matter does its best to highlight the contributions Dakota and Ojibwe people are making today.
I think that Native people are acting in the 20th century is the strongest part of the exhibit in terms of specificity of individual programs, whether it's solar energy or economic development or things like that. I think that's the longest segment, but I think they do a pretty good job in some of the other parts as well in terms of early interactions were positive. As a society today, we're facing multicultural issues, and we need to know in the past we were able to figure out ways that worked, not always, but they're there and we can learn from that. People worked well when they accommodated to each other instead of dictated to one another. And I think, there are little bits of those stories in there as well. But I think the largest part is how, the treaties of the past matter and are empowering of tribes today to act for themselves and to help themselves. But in the process, they're also helping the rest of society. An environmental program at one of the Minnesota reservations is going to impact the state. Economic development opportunities, places like casinos, they develop a lot of revenue toward non-Indian people, and local communities off reservations. So I think those are some of the stories that need to be told as well.
When asked about the benefits the Why Treaties Matter exhibit may have for tribes in the state, Galler said he hopes this exhibit will lead to further exploration of this and other topics relating to American Indians.
I would hope people can use it as a springboard to learn more. Myself and my colleague Darlene St. Clair at the Multicultural Resource Center are doing a workshop for teachers who might be interested in how they might use this exhibit and ideas related to it, as well as a companion website in their classrooms. We hope to highlight some of the major themes of the exhibit that I've talked about: tribal adaptation, cultural persistence, sovereignty, tribal diversity. We'll talk about those things and hopefully have, you know, teachers on any level come in and learn a little bit more about it. But I think people who come to it will be able to gain those things. And I hope they use it toward learning more, because a single exhibit can't do anything. But I think it'll draw them in. And I think it hopefully will move them in other directions. There are other public programs, too, that they could look into as well. The workshop we have will be on Wednesday the 10th at 4:30 in the Atwood Center. That's one that I'm particularly involved with. There are a couple other speakers. One person from the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council will be here, and a couple others as well. So you get a chance to, you know, hear from other people. So whether people want to use it and incorporate it into teaching or just are interested generally, there are events they can take a look into to find out about. And hopefully that helps them to, you know, expand their understanding and maybe raise some other questions to look for further at things.
Overall, Galler believes this exhibit is just a starting point for students, staff, faculty, and community members to gain a better understanding of the Dakota and Ojibwe people in Minnesota and the realization as to why treaties do matter.
Well, I like to think as a historian that people will start to realize that things of the past, decisions made in the past, matter today. And, you know, treaties matter for tribes today because the federal government established recognition on a nation-to-nation basis. And if the nation stood by them then and they stand by them now, they do matter. And that's part of the, you know, the mechanism to reinforce why tribes act as independent groups today. There's a belief, I think, sometimes that all people should be equal. Well, the reality is Native nations are separate nations, not equal to every other group in the country. And I think that's significant. But the treaties matter because we as a government way back made some decisions to make some negotiations, and they matter today in terms of fulfilling tribal people's goals and pursuing their own interests for their own people. I mean, it gives a focal point for people to come together. Maybe it's faculty, maybe it's students, to look at one thing. I think there's a lot more that can be done than a single exhibit being in a campus for 2 weeks. And certainly MinSCU could do more to reinforce these kind of things. But I think it's a starting point. And if schools want to take it and move further with it, I think it could be effective. A single exhibit coming for 2 weeks doesn't do a whole lot, you know, beyond initial exposure. But hopefully it can be useful beyond those kind of things. So I'm glad that they have it. You know, it's been touring other places, but it should come onto campuses. I think if the campuses have the resources to spread that out to local communities broadly, I think that will have a greater impact. And the reality is if the ideas of the exhibit can filter down to the elementary, junior, and senior high schools, we're going to have better conversations when we get into the college level as well. So I think it should, you know, move itself into other places as well. So being on campus is great, but, you know, filtering it out further, I think, is perhaps even more important.
Why Treaties Matter, Self-Government in the Dakota and Ojibwe Nations will be on the campus of SCSU through Friday morning at 8 a.m. The exhibit is on display on the second floor of the Atwood Memorial Center outside the Cascade Room and will be open as long as the building is open. For KVSC News, I'm Vicki Iacago.